Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the University Registrar's Talking About Stuff podcast, in which I have the great pleasure of talking to Neil Lamond, who's Registrar and Chief Operating Officer at Swansea University. Neve has enjoyed a long career in higher education, covering several of the Celtic corners of the sector, including Cornwall, Northern Ireland and South Wales. She spent a significant period in Falmouth as part of an institution which grew rapidly from a college into a university, crucially as part of the Combined Universities in Cornwall initiative, which started in the late 1990s and brought significant EU resources into a region of real deprivation. Having established a strong partnership and shared services model with Exeter University, and also been instrumental in opening a new campus in Penryn on the site of a convent school, Neve decided to join Ulster University, where she also got involved in some exciting major capital developments. The move to Swansea followed, and as with Falmouth and Ulster, she feels this is a university with a really strong sense of place and community. Swansea has had some significant governance challenges in the recent past, but having spent time rebuilding confidence, is very much focused on the future now and a major organisational improvement programme. We also discuss, inevitably, the major cost of living and energy crises facing universities and their staff and students, as well as wider society. Recognising the demands which would be made of the university as an anchor institution, and given the contributions made to the community during the pandemic, there is, nevertheless, Neve argues, a primary obligation to ensure that the institution remains financially sustainable in order to preserve jobs and the wider economic benefits it brings to the region. Finally, we learn about Neve's involvement in a major fundraising programme while at Ulster, which included both abseiling and sleeping rough as part of a campaign to generate funds to support student health and well-being. It's a great conversation and I really hope you enjoy it. Welcome everyone to the latest episode of University Registrars Talking About Stuff, and this time it's my huge pleasure to introduce Neve Lamond, who is Registrar and Chief Operating Officer at the University of Swansea, or Swansea University. I can never remember which way around these things go. Anyway, good day to you, Neve, and thanks for joining us.
Oh, pleasure to see Paul and to be able to join this conversation.
Great, well it's great to have you on. So Neve, you've had a kind of long and, sorry, long sense, it's disrespectful, doesn't it? But you've had certainly had a varied career in higher education. You've been in higher education for a very long time. But I think, am I right thinking you started out as in the dark and mysterious world of finance? Is that correct?
Well, actually, there's a little bit before that piece.
Oh, right.
Yes. Absolutely. When I first left university, I did an engineering degree. Right. I worked as a research. I had an industry sponsored research studentship at Queen's University. Ah. Yes. And I was working there for about, I did that for about 2 years. And then I realized that an academic career or going that pathway wasn't going to be for me. So I actually went to work in industry for a few years, where I qualified as a chartered management accountant, and was expecting to stay in industry. But as it happened, I stumbled into higher education, partly because of geography, partly because I got married. And it was the first job I got after I became a qualified accountant. And then the rest is history.
So that was in Falmouth, am I correct?
Yes, I started off as a management accountant in Falmouth in my mid-20s. And it was a very, very small, actually it was a college of art and design, in fact. Mm. And but it grew very, very quickly. And within 2 years, I was actually finance director. So I was quite a young finance director, even though it was a small institution, you know, you wear many hats. And what could have been a very limited, I suppose, developmental experience for me ended up being hugely exciting. I was there for over 20 years. And, you know, the university itself, the university college, it became a university in the early thousands. But before that, it grew very fast. And it grew because, well, there was demand. And it was when a lot of HE institutions grew in the 90s, around early thousands. And then it was also in a very fortunate position of being where European funding was, a big European funding programme was just to be announced. So this was an opportunity for Cornwall to develop it and really grow its higher education base from very, very low levels and an area of quite a lot of deprivation. So it was very visionary to bring the HE providers together to expand opportunities for young people and really to stop the brain drain in Cornwall. Mm. And that was all the HE providers, the FE colleges, Plymouth University, Falmouth University and Exeter University. But I suppose central to that particular development, which is called the Combined Universities in Cornwall, was a partnership between Exeter and Falmouth, which was the joint development of a new flagship campus. There were lots of other really exciting developments, particularly around FE as well, but the flagship university campus was at Penryn. And I had the huge pleasure of signing a cheque for the site. It was actually formerly a convent school, and I wrote them a cheque for the site. And needless to say, after that, we did add. There was a bit of land assembly. We bought additional land, but over quite a long period, probably 15 years, Falmouth University and Exeter University developed a joint venture to develop this together, funded mainly by European funding. I'd say there was the best part of 400 million invested in that site over a number of phases. I personally then went to be from finance director to be director of finance and resources, and was very much in the, you know, at the centre of the development of that partnership with Exeter. And it was really, you know, there were no blueprints for this. It was new, it was novel. And we had all the joys of, you know, big capital bills and building projects. But actually one of the most interesting thing was the shared service delivery model, which was basically the professional services. Most of the professional services were delivered jointly to the two universities through their joint venture of the two universities. And so I was involved. I was a director of that for a number of years on the Falmouth side, and nominated director by Falmouth.
I mean, it really is a fascinating story. Well, first off, I'd completely forgotten about the Combined Universities Cornwall thing, right? And of course, people say CUC and you think of something else these days. Well, at least other people. I completely forgot about that. So a fantastic history lesson there, Niamh. But the other thing is, I hadn't again realised that the Falmouth development was an entire new campus development, and that's the principal site for the university nowadays, is it, that Penryn site?
Well, the Falmouth has had an original base in Falmouth, lovely small campus. The Penryn campus had been acquired in probably 1999 or something like that, 2000, and it had been a convent school, and it then became basically around 100 acres, I think it's now 100 acres of land, which was jointly developed by Falmouth and Exeter together. New libraries, joint libraries, whole new infrastructure, student village, labs, you know, studios, and so on. But it was actually quite a challenge overcoming a lot of those, just working out how this was going to work in practice, because of course it's a lot of risk sharing in a joint venture of that kind, capital planning, joint capital planning, you know, dealing and providing services to different, very different types of students from different institutions and so on. But it has worked really well, and that model has endured today, I know, and it's been successful.
Well, that was my next question, right? Because, I mean, that story around shared services and that shared approach, etc., that was a model that was often, you know, described as being the way forward for groups of universities, etc., etc. And, you know, that was a path-breaking approach in Cornwall. But it continues, do you say, that partnership?
Well, that partnership has been continues to operate today fairly much as it was designed 20 years ago, which is remarkable, actually, and delivers to both partners things that they couldn't have done on their own. So it is a win-win. And, and I go back to Cornwall, as I do regularly. We still have a house in Cornwall. I regularly go up and I see what's continuing to grow. And, you know, on one occasion, I bumped into one of the local councillors, a long-standing councillor of Cornwall Council, who were really supportive of this at the time. And I ask him, you know, what difference has this made? And he says, it has been a game changer in terms of regenerating socially and economically. And I have to say, I think anybody who was involved in that from those early days just, you know, is just filled with a real sense that of the impact that was achieved by it.
It's fantastic. And you must feel, you know, really proud to have been a part of that as well. So why did you leave?
Well, my last job actually was as the CEO of the joint venture between the two universities. And and that was great in itself. It was a very different job from being a director of finance and resources. And I really enjoyed it. It was a completely different experience. It's a real leadership experience being a CEO, especially of a joint venture when you've got two masters. But I suppose I'd been in Cornwall a long time. I got the opportunity to be more mobile because my husband had stepped down from his role. So, you know, I suppose it was always an interest in going to work back in Ireland, where I come from. I come from Dublin, but an opportunity came up in Northern Ireland at Ulster University and as a chief operating officer. And I suppose it was also an opportunity to move into a larger organization. So I went to work at Ulster University in 2016.
So that was so that's 2016. And so, but Ulster was a kind of it's a multi-campus university as well, isn't it? So how was that for you?
Well, it was fantastic. A fantastic experience. It is it's a university of about 20 odd thousand students growing, I would think at this stage, a bit bigger than that now, over four campuses. At the time, there was a small one in Belfast, another larger one in a place called Jordanstown, which is about 8 miles outside Belfast, one in Derry, Londonderry, sort of medium sized, and another sort of medium sized one in Coleraine. And it had been formed over time, you know, with various legislation and mergers. And of course, what you've got in Northern Ireland is a really good position, I think, where they've got two strong universities of good size. You've got Queen's and you've got Ulster University. Both very research leading. Obviously, Queen's is in the Russell Group. Ulster is also really strong in research and teaching. And it has a strong tradition for that, but also has a tradition for the more vocational as well. So it was very challenging delivering university over four campuses, especially at that stage, as is still the case, where the funding for higher education was far less advantageous than in GB, but you know it was a market where basically one third of the students went to Queen's, one third of the students went to Ulster, and one third of them went to GB, and that was very predictable. So in a sense, Ulster was insulated to some extent from the sort of massive competition that was happening in GB, certainly at that time. So my job was to lead the professional services, and I led a professional services transformation to support the strategy of the university, and made quite a lot of changes, and developed new teams, which continue to work well today. Recruited really good people. But I also had another part of my job was to lead the development of the new Belfast campus, because the vision was to move the 15,000 students who are in Jordanstown, 8 miles from Belfast, in a fairly ugly 60s built campus, a bit soulless, right into the centre of Belfast. And this was an absolutely brilliant and bold decision the university had taken probably 10 years before I even arrived, and had actually managed to secure the land, the planning permission to develop this new campus, £360 million worth of investment, in a site which was previously, you know, during the Troubles, there would have been a no-go area within easily viewing distance of some of the poorest areas, deprived areas of Northern Ireland and New Lodge. So this was really quite visionary. And I came in at a point where the building was actually in the ground, the building had started, but actually we had huge issues to deal with, multifaceted, multidimensional. So my job was really to make sure that we got that project back on track and to deliver it. And, you know, that was challenging, but I worked with some great people, and, you know, we overcame the challenges. And I'm delighted to know that building is literally opened in the last month or two.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant, and looking forward to going and seeing it myself and the opening, etc. So that was a huge learning experience, and again, I think it was one of those where I felt privileged to be in an opportunity where I knew I was able to make a real difference. Yeah. And to know when I go back to Belfast that, you know, I played a part. And I was part of a team that delivered some enduring benefit for the city, and for students, obviously, and staff.
Yeah, and that's a fantastic development. As you say, you know, Ulster is a strong institution, along with Queen's in Northern Ireland. But then, you know, not only have you done what you did in Cornwall and in Northern Ireland, you then decide to go to Wales, to Swansea, which is where you are now. And you've only been there, I think, less than a year, haven't you?
Yes, I came in July 2021. Yes, yes.
Oh, so just over a year.
Yes, just over a year. And I first came as an interim, actually, not knowing whether I wanted to take on a full executive position. But I fell in love with Swansea very, very quickly. I knew soon, very early on, that the university as a community had something very special about it. It was obviously it's a strong institution, 100 years old. You know, built on the on the back of the pennies of the people here in Swansea, and industry, which of course was a very industrial part of the world at that stage and still is, but yet in the most absolutely outstandingly beautiful part of the world, and not the perceptions that most people have. So I think the university and the place and the people, the warmth of the people here in Wales, I think being a fellow Celt probably helps, but I've had lots of fun and really enjoy the humour, and also their huge commitment to place here, yeah. As was the case in Northern Ireland, as was the case in Cornwall. I think when people here have such a pride of place, identity, and a really big and loyal commitment to the university. So yes, I've been here over a year, learning a little bit of Welsh and language, which which of course is really important, and getting my head around a seven vowels of the Welsh language. But no, it's been really good, and we've got lots to do here, and I'm actually sponsoring an organizational improvement program over the next 3 years. It's called Umline, which in Welsh means moving forward. So we've been really just mobilizing a whole series of projects at different scale, different pace, in order to try and make a really, really step change in the organizational effectiveness here, and which is going really well.
That's terrific. Before you arrived there were some real challenges around the governance of the institution, and I suppose my question is, have you know, governance things, once they're resolved, can resolve themselves fairly quickly and everyone moves on? I mean, do you get a sense that actually that's behind the university now, and that everyone is moving on and looking forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the governance issues here go back to sort of 2018. We're now 4 years behind, that's 4 years behind us. And there's been major improvements in governance since then. I think the chair of council, a number of the council members, the vice chancellor, the university secretary, all have made actually quite a lot of progress before I arrived. I won't give myself credit for that, but I think even in over the last year, I've seen even further improvement. I think very, very good governance here. But it obviously there was a lot of work to do and a lot of trust to rebuild, clearly, with regulators and actually the staff themselves here as well. So I think that has all gone really well, though I think there's always a price to pay, in the sense that, you know, it was a distraction for a period of time. But I think now it's absolutely it's all guns blazing, going ahead. Ensuring that the university is able to deliver to its absolute full potential.
Oh, that's great to hear. But we are going into a challenging period in terms of the economic situation facing the country, and we know that it's going to have an impact not only on universities but on our staff, and probably most on our students. And I wondered what the thinking of Swansea is, around the kind of the challenges around energy costs and the kind of cost of living crisis, because we're all trying to grapple with a very different scenario all of a sudden, aren't we?
We certainly are. And when we were doing our financial planning back in May, June, for this academic year, financial year, we obviously made provisions for energy increases and to a certain degree for pay. But I don't think we understood. We didn't recognise how Ukraine was going to play out. And I don't think most institutions really did that. And now, everywhere we look, we're seeing the consequences. So, of course, we've got the whole issue about pay, the biggest issue, energy, residential accommodation contracts with our major partners. We've got bus strikes in Swansea because of pay, which, of course, we're having to pick up the costs of. Students are struggling, and we know that we're going to have to support them in every way we can, though it's not easy to do that because we've got to make sure the university remains strong. But I suppose there are other things. Of course, our supply chains, some of our supply chains are going to fail, whether it's in capital building, whether it's in any other aspect of digital supply chains, etc. We're finding it very hard there's a year lead time for a lot of technology nowadays. So, and all of that is probably going to lead to even more cost inflation. So it's hitting us from every side. So what we're doing is you know, I'm working very closely with our CFO, our Director of Estates and Campus Services, and we're and you know, Director of our CFO, CIO, and just looking at all these various aspects and stress testing the position this year and probably more next year. Our energy contracts are fixed, I think, until April. But after that, we're likely to see bigger increases. And we don't think we're going to get shielded. You know, we're not going to get that much government support. I mean, certainly not as much as we need. It'll go into you know, it will be domestic and rather than commercial, I think, or even, you know, for universities. So that is a real strain. But I have to say, it's just not the only one. We're having to tackle the other, you know, the other two big ones at the moment, really, for us will be around driving down our carbon emissions. You know, we're aiming to get to zero carbon by 2035. We've got to really test, you know, the viability of that and how we can fund it, how we can make that happen. Which is which in itself is going to require substantial investment as well as changes of behaviour. In some respects, you know, the sort of scope one and two, you know, the energy consumption is one thing, but it's what do we do with business travel? What do we do with international, you know, students coming? All of these are adding. So I think that is a real issue for us. Very central.
So when you were talking earlier about Swansea, I mean, you talked about community, and I mean, presumably the university is one of the bigger employers in the area as well, and employs a lot of, you know, local people, but also is a, you know, and students will be kind of net contributors to the economic strength of the area as well. And so in that, thinking about that kind of role as a kind of anchor institution in the area, I mean, you know, there must be a kind of sense in which, you know, it's not only your staff and students are looking to you, but there will be others looking to the university to, you know, to help steer a way through this as well.
Well, absolutely. Everybody wants a little bit of the local university and looks to us for solutions. And of course, during COVID, the universities did. And, you know, and Swansea was right in the middle of some major research advances to deal with those issues. Fundamentally, we cannot really solve the cost of living increase or significantly alleviate them for our local community. I'm afraid that's just not possible. What we've got to do is make sure that the university's finances are sustained through this period, that we remain solid financially, because, you know, we are a growth industry, and we've got to make sure we get through this period in order to continue in the future. And to be strong, to maintain strong research, to retain really strong teaching, probably to diversify and bring in sources of income that will add to traditional campus-based students. But we've got to invest in what's going in the future success of the university, and we can't really do much other than trying to support our students in greatest need, being very sensitive also to our staff and their financial position. And we are real living wage employers, and we're doing everything we can at that bottom end of you know, the lower end of the pay scales. But I think the simple answer is it's very difficult for us to do a lot. There is one thing that we are trying to do, which is work with other big employers around maybe transport issues or and the like, and of course contributing to things like food banks. But in the big scheme of things, I think what we can do is to maintain the employment, make sure we retain all the jobs, keep local people employed, The more people are employed, then the more people can spend in the economy locally.
And keep the institution sustainable. No, I completely agree, and it's difficult, but those are the times we live in, and that's a responsibility we have, is to ensure that there is a university to sustain the towns and the cities we live in for the next generation as well. We need to stop in a moment, Niamh, but before we do, I just wanted to ask, in your long and illustrious career in higher education, is there something that you would highlight as something perhaps particularly surprising or amusing or unusual that might be of interest to all the many listeners?
Well, I'm going to talk about something which was fun, which was good. Really a lot of fun. There was a serious aspect of it as well. But when I was at Ulster, you'll be aware of the real pressures there are on students and the toll it takes on mental health.
Yeah.
And in Northern Ireland, that was no different from anywhere else. But it was very high profile and prominent issue, to the point where the university and the student union worked together on an initiative called Mind Your Mood. It's okay not to be okay, was some of the messaging that went around it. So it was a communications campaign as much as anything else. But where staff and students, student union in particular, came together, and we did a lot of fundraising. So it wasn't just, we weren't just asking our benefactors, etc., and our alumni to help fund this campaign, but staff joined in. And we did some amazing things. Things I never would have dreamt of doing. Some were very uncomfortable, very daunting. And just to give you a flavour, I ended up being part of a four-person relay team in the Belfast Marathon, which I am not an athlete.
I am not an athlete.
I then went on to do an abseil down a 9-story building in the centre of Belfast, which was absolutely terrifying at the time, but a great sense of achievement and excitement once it was all over. And then, wait for it, sleeping rough one night on cardboard on a very cold winter's night, just outside St Anne's Cathedral in Belfast, in a place called Writer's Square, along with student sabbaticals and other staff. And I have to say, it was an eye opener into what it was like for homeless people. Mm. But we also had a lot of fun and a very, very memorable time. And there's a great sense of camaraderie. And we look back at all the photographs of those. You know, it was a fantastic initiative, and things, you know, I would never have done otherwise.
I should hope not. Well, I mean, that's terrific to hear, Niamh. And those kind of things are great for not only for raising funds, but as you say, for developing that real kind of team spirit and that kind of sense of community within an institution across staff and students for, you know, all, as you say, for a very good reason. That's terrific to hear. Niamh, we need to stop there. So I just want to say thank you so much for a really engaging and interesting discussion across the swathe of the British Isles. So that's been absolutely terrific. So thanks ever so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That's all then from this episode of University Registrars Talking About Stuff. There will be another one along before you know it. And in the meantime, if you can't get enough of this kind of thing, there is an extensive back catalogue of previous conversations with University Registrars talking about lots of different stuff. Until the next time then.